Through the centuries, it's been given many names. Blackfish, Grampus, Whale Killer. And while the seas are full of creatures vying for their place on the food chain, the orca is unequivocally on top.
Hi, I'm Matthias, and this is V1&0, the show where celebrities get cerebral. On today's episode, Slater learns about killer whales. Here are a few things that we already know about whales. They are very big, sometimes. They are the inspiration for the book and film Moby Dick. They sometimes wind up on our beaches, and that's a big problem. But let's get into some of the deep cuts for whales, okay? These are like for whale fanatics. They are between 9 feet and 98 feet, which is almost the size of a professional basketball court. If you've never been to a basketball game like me, then that doesn't help much, but I can tell that they're big. They're huge. Whales can be huge. They are, in fact, the largest animals on Earth. So there you go. They weigh between 500 pounds and 200 tons. Dolphins are whales, actually. So there you go. And researchers believe that whales can hear each other's calls from thousands of miles away. So you know a little bit more about whales than when you started this episode, right? I think we're all learning here. But how has humankind negatively impacted whale populations, especially those in captivity? How intelligent are these sea mammals, and how does their intelligence compare to or differ from our own? Would whales enjoy Slater's music if they heard it? Well, that's what Slater would like to know. Slater is a 25-year-old from St. Louis, Missouri, who currently resides in Los Angeles. If she had her way, however, she would probably be living in the middle of the ocean amongst a big pack of orca whales, because she just really loves whales a lot, and she came super prepared for this episode. Like many of my favorite artists, Slater began her musical career by uploading songs to SoundCloud. She went on to release a self-titled debut mixtape, followed by her album Troubled Paradise in 2021. This all kicked off while she was working as a receptionist at a hair salon, booking in people's appointments while simultaneously reading what the internet was writing about the buzzy underground pop star. Now, Slater fans are awaiting her second full-length album with patience. But in the meantime, we are using her time to discuss something that is technically far bigger: whales. Our specialist on today's episode is Dr. Michael Weiss, who is a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Exeter and the research director for the Center of Whale Research. Specifically, he studies the social structure and population dynamics of Pacific killer whale populations in order to inform their conservation. Enjoy the show. Okay, so first things first, you just were on tour in Europe, and I'm dying to know if you ever found your bag, because your bag went missing, tragically.
Three of my bags. Three like large suitcases filled with all my stuff, like my costumes, my hair, my everything. They have not located it. We have like tried to kind of stay on it, but airlines, especially right now, it's one of those things where like you call, you're on hold for 2 hours, and then the person that you get through to finally is kind of like, yeah, I don't really know. And then you're like, where do I call then? Like, does someone know that can talk to me? And they're like, no, I don't really know. You're like, okay, great. Right. All right.
That's horrible.
I think all that clothes, I think it's gone forever, but I'm still holding on to hope. I've just been replacing all my stuff like little by little.
You just have to kind of let go and let God, I guess. Hopefully it comes back to you.
Yeah. I'm trying to be very like holistic, like spiritual about it. Like, you know, it's just like material items. Like I don't need them, but like on the inside, I'm like, my shells.
I know. You're like, but on the inside, I'm a material girl. Well, I was on the phone with Air Canada for 2 hours, and then I realized it was costing me like $1 a minute. And so I made my mom call them. And if you need her to call an airline for you, she will wait, because she's just kind of chilling.
Right. I'm going to shake you up on that.
I'll connect you with her. I'm sorry to hear about the bags. I do want to hear how the rest of Europe was, because I think you had told me it was your first time coming to Europe, right? Let alone playing here.
It was my very first time. It was super inspiring, honestly. All the shows went really well. The luggage thing didn't even matter just because it was so incredible. Like I really made the most of my time in every city. I got to like go to a rave in Berlin and like do all these things that I never dreamed of doing. So it was really cool. And I feel like it's going to kind of like inform my next wave of music just because like I've seen the world.
She's seen the world. What was it like seeing bands that live in all these different countries? Like, I feel like that must be a really surreal thing because the internet feels so small. And then you're going to Berlin or you're going to London or whatever. And then it's like you're seeing people there that are connecting with your music and follow you online or whatever it is.
It's really cool. Honestly, I feel like, especially when there's like a language barrier, that's when it's like the craziest, just because, you know, me and this person don't even speak the same language. Like the songs I'm singing, like they aren't even in their like native tongue, but they still connect with it and resonate with it. And like me as a person and as an artist are coming out to the show. So that was really wild and really cool. I felt bad. I kept trying to like learn like little phrases in each city that I would like butcher, but it was really cool. It was super magical. Honestly, everyone was so kind. I feel like, especially over in Europe, dance music is so much more kind of like the mainstream thing. Like people like love it and appreciate it a little more than I feel like in the States. So all of the concerts were just going off. People were like dancing. It was really great.
Amazing. What was your favorite city? Can you say?
Oh, I don't know. Honestly, they all have their own special things about them. The craziest show was definitely Manchester. They like stopped me mid-show to like just like in like this uproar and like kind of like a standing ovation thing, but everyone was already like standing. And I started to like cry on stage. I've never had that happen before. And that was really wild. I've never been like interrupted because of like screams and like cheering. And it was really special.
Oh my God. I love that. You're like, they gave me a standing ovation. Well, they were all standing anyway.
You know, like the concept of like everyone like rest of love.
No, of course. Of course. Of course. That's so sweet. Which show was it where you came out with the little British flags? Was that Manchester?
Oh, that was London. Yeah.
Just doing your due diligence. I love that.
Part of the thing of losing my luggage was I tried to like get new outfits and cater them to like each city. So for like London, I did like a Vivian Westwood like schoolgirl, like British. I don't know.
I saw it. No, it was amazing.
Yeah.
It was a bit of like a Spice Girl meets like Tattoo vibe.
Yeah. Like I kind of was trying to step to the theme for each city, you know?
I do. And I was just stalking your Twitter before we did this. And I saw that so tragically you didn't make it to Warsaw because of flights. And I know that you're Polish, so you were like dying to do Warsaw.
Yeah.
But I'm sure in the future you'll have something in store for them.
Oh, absolutely. That was like the day of the luggage fiasco was Warsaw. We were on our way. We had a connecting flight and then all the flights were delayed. Traveling international right now is honestly just like not... It's not the thing to do, but I think hopefully on the next tour, I'll be able to hit Poland, especially. I'm like dying to go. It's like the motherland, you know?
Like you were saying you're going to do like a polka version.
Yeah. That'll be like my on theme. I'll wear like a fully like polka dress. I'll come out with an accordion. My papa would be so proud.
Slater with an accordion would be so good. I think everyone would be like, everything is completely forgiven. I mean, it wasn't your fault in the first place, but I think it's like worth waiting for if you kind of give them that type of show. You know what I mean?
Proper Polish polka.
You're a proper Polish girl doing a proper Polish polka.
Exactly.
Are you in Los Angeles right now?
Yes.
I know you're in LA, but you're from somewhere called Kirkwood, Missouri. Is that right?
Yeah, Kirkwood.
Tell me about Kirkwood. Like if they did a Real Housewives of Kirkwood, what would the cast be like? Like what's the vibe in Kirkwood?
Kirkwood, honestly, it's a suburb of St. Louis, which they should do a Real Housewives of St. Louis because Andy Cohen is like literally from there. I don't know why there isn't one, but you would be surprised. Like it kind of can go half and half. There's like 20 minutes further from like where I'm from is like a little more rural vibes, but then you go like 20 minutes in another direction. It's like very St. Louis housewife, Lily Pulitzer, like very preppy, very clutch their pearls at breakfast kind of women. And yeah, so I feel like it would be a good franchise. He needs to do that for sure.
If Andy Cohen said like, you need to move back home, but I will do that with you in like 10 years, would you do the Real Housewives of Kirkwood?
Oh, absolutely. Have me marry like one of the Bush kids. I don't know. And I'd be throwing wine all around. That's like my dream. I literally love Real Housewives. It's my favorite show.
Also my favorite show. Are you watching Beverly Hills right now?
No, I'm not caught up on anything. I cycle through old episodes. Right now I'm on like really old seasons of like Real Housewives of New York, but I think I'll get around to like watching the new seasons. I like to like find things out when like the beef is cold, like when everything's like already done. And like, I like stay off of Twitter to like not like get anything spoiled, but yeah.
I did want to say, I looked up Kirkwood trying to be like, is that a place that I should know? And I wound up on the city's website. And I don't know if you've heard the good news, but the city of Kirkwood received a certificate of achievement for excellence in financial reporting.
Oh.
And I just want you to see the photo.
Wait, shut up.
Of these icons.
Oh my God, go off, girl. Kirkwood City Hall. I love it.
So I don't know. You guys are good at financial reporting. Like it's probably something in the water there.
I don't know exactly what that means. Does that mean like good at reporting what they're like spending tax dollars on?
No idea.
Love that. Good for them.
I really have no idea, but I just know they seem really proud of it. And also there's hot dog Sundays in the park every Sunday this summer. So Kirkwood is just like delivering. Love Kirkwood, Missouri. Have to get there.
No wonder. It actually used to be like a thing. I like love hot dogs, and online fans would always be like, you're so gross. Who even eats hot dogs? And I'm like, my hometown would have a hot dog Sunday.
They have hot dog Sunday every Sunday this summer. I feel like I know now more about your hometown than you do after visiting their website. I'm in Stockholm right now, and they have like 7-Eleven is literally everywhere. And the thing to do is get a hot dog at 7-Eleven. You can do it any time of day.
Oh, nice.
It's like hot dog central. So next time you come to Europe, you have to come to Stockholm. You'll fit right in.
I love that. Yeah, absolutely.
So smooth segue from that. We're going to be talking about whales.
Great. Yeah.
And I'm wondering, why is this a subject you wanted to learn more about? Why do you love whales so much?
It has been my favorite animal since I was like a little kid. And then it really kind of drove home. I watched like Blackfish, obviously. I feel like everyone went through like a phase where they like saw Blackfish and they're like, girl, like the whales. And I've just been fascinated with them. I feel like it's such an intelligent animal. They're so complex and like they're social. Like they're just very interesting to me, but I feel like I don't know everything about them. Obviously, like with my line of work, whales don't really come up that often. So I'll take any opportunity to learn about whales as much as I can.
That's true. In your line of work, whales do not come up that often. No. Do you remember The Loneliest Whale? I'm like, I want a singer to sing a song about The Loneliest Whale so badly. We talked really briefly about it at dinner. Yeah. It's the whale that the frequency at which it sings is either too high or too low or something, and no other whales can find it.
I haven't seen that yet. I wasn't sure if I was supposed to do like research prep work. I feel like I didn't know if the point of this was that I don't know about it yet.
No. Yeah.
As soon as we're done with this, like, I don't really have shit to do today. Watch The Loneliest Whale.
Okay, amazing. And if you want to like write a song about her, like I'm sure she'd appreciate it.
She needs that.
You said it doesn't come up a lot in your work. I'm just trying to like build that intersection. You know what I mean?
Give some whale representation.
Exactly. It's important. V1&0 is sponsored by Yuke's, the one-stop destination for art and fashion. I love Yuke's so much, and it's not just because they were a first ever sponsor for this podcast. They actually have an amazing collection online. Head to yukes.com and see for yourself. I mess up on this podcast all the time. Some of it you hear, the rest of it you don't. That's thanks to Citizens of Sound, a one-stop shop we use for all of our podcasting needs here at V1&0. Citizens will help you with conceptualization, branding, production, editing, and distribution. So whether you're an artist, an actor, or you just think you have a compelling story to tell, podcasting might be the right route for you, and Citizens of Sound are here to help. Head to their website, citizensofsound.com, for more information. Dr. Michael Weiss, thank you so much for joining us. This is Slater, whale enthusiast, but also student, perpetual student of life and whales in particular.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm wondering if to start, you can just give us a little bit of a bio on yourself and how you got into the field that you're in.
I'm the currently the research director at the Center for Whale Research on San Juan Island in Washington State. I'm also a postdoctoral researcher in Exeter, UK, which is where I am right now. I have been working with killer whales since 2013. I started as an intern at the Whale Museum and did various bits of research work and education work. Started my PhD with Exeter and the Center for Whale Research in 2017. I've wanted to do killer whale stuff since I was a very small kid.
So I'm going to let Slater just jump in with a couple questions. Yeah, go for it.
All right. I guess my first question would be kind of around something I've like heard in documentaries about like orca whales, killer whales having like parts of their brain that humans don't have, like extra parts of the brain and stuff. In your opinion, would you say that they are like smarter than human beings?
It's a really interesting question. So the first part of that question, I could just confirm, yeah, so killer whales do have parts of their brain that we don't have. It's kind of like a paralimbic system. It seems to be kind of associated with parts of the limbic system, which is where a lot of stuff happens, but some of that is emotional processing. The smarter question is a really interesting one. And I, as someone who studies animal behavior, I'm really interested in that kind of question, because how we judge how smart animals are typically comes down to tasks that we think of as being smart to solve. You know, we give them a maze and see how well they do it, or we give them a puzzle that we invent and see how long it takes them to solve it. But for my money, we should really be kind of judging animals on their terms. In animal behavior, we kind of call it the Umwelt, the animal's world, the world from the animal's perspective. And from that perspective, killer whales are as cognitively good at being killer whales as they can possibly be, right? They have brains that are wired for acoustic sensing much more than visual sensing. So they can, with echolocation, pick up not just where fish are in the water, but the species of fish, how big they are, how far away they are. Like I was kind of hinting at earlier, they've got these brains that are super wired for social interaction and social life, and they are pretty purely social animals in some really real ways. We talk about dolphins having names, you might have heard. You know, dolphins have names, signature whistles, these whistles they make that kind of stand in for names. Killer whales don't have those. They have group signatures. So they have calls that are specific to their group, which to me is just an example of kind of how they are totally social animals. So to answer the question, I don't know if I can compare apples to apples with comparing human smarts with whale smarts, but I will say killer whales are the best at being killer whales that they can be, and that does involve a lot of problem solving and a lot of social intelligence. So in those ways, they're really, really smart.
It's always freaked me out how smart they are, just because I feel like, in a way, a lot of times, like sometimes animals can be super intelligent because they're not like ambidextrous, I guess, like a human being is. Like we can capture them and put them into, which is like, this is going into my next question about captivity, but we can like put them into tanks and do things like that, but kind of gives us like a superiority over an animal like that. But in reality, they're so sentient and smart. And I have to ask like what your opinions are on whales in captivity and things like that, just because they are so intelligent and social and et cetera.
Yeah. So killer whales in captivity has obviously been a huge issue since, you know, Blackfish came out, you know, almost a decade ago, I think at this point, which is around the same time I was getting into killer whale work. So a very exciting time. My general feeling is I'm not for killer whales in captivity. I think killer whales are not really killer whales when they're in a tank, and specifically when they're separated from their social groups. So much of their identity seems to be around family and social groups. So you take a killer whale out of that, I don't really know what you've got anymore. In terms of the whales that are currently in captivity, right, almost all of them were born there. So for them, my opinion would be we should focus on making their lives as good as we can, but they're probably never going to be able to go back to the wild. There's so many skills a killer whale needs and a social circle a killer whale needs to be successful in the wild that these whales that are born in captivity just don't have and probably can't have. The few whales that are left that were born in the wild, not in captivity, they might have a shot. You know, it's only been tried once before, and that was Keiko, Free Willy. And he did live in the wild for 6 months or so, and then unfortunately died of pneumonia. But he did socialize with other killer whales in that time. You know, we think he was hunting for himself, at least occasionally. And the big one for me right now, there's a whale in Miami Seaquarium who's all alone. She's been kept alone for over 40 years. And her name is, well, they call her Lolita. People who are advocating for her release more likely to call her Tokite. And she belongs to the population I study in the Pacific Northwest. We think we know who her family group is. We think she still makes their calls, or at least still recognizes them.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of hope that potentially, if not fully released, she could at least be brought out to, you know, some open water, feel the tide again and stuff like that. So yeah, I'm for at least exploring, trying to release the whales that were born in the wild. And the ones that are born in captivity, I'm for no more breeding, no more captures, phase out killer whale captivity, make their lives as comfortable as we possibly can in the meantime.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny that you mention that whale in Miami, because a TikTok just popped up on my app the other day about her specifically. And I thought it was interesting that a lot of these places or aquariums, they'll like end their breeding programs. They're like, look, like we did what you all asked us to, blah, blah, blah. But then there's like one single lone whale just like lethargically like float it. It's so sad.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering, like, what do you think is the answer for a lot of these, you know, aquariums or SeaWorld type places, like after ending the breeding programs, what from there like needs to be done, do you think, to help give some of these whales that have lived in captivity the best lives possible? Like, is it like marine sanctuaries? Is it, you know, like what's like the best answer to that?
So I'll start with Tokete. Her tank is illegal under current guidelines, but it was grandfathered in. So the conditions she's being kept in are completely unacceptable. Whether you think she needs to be released or not, her current housing is not adequate for a killer whale.
Can you just explain why that is? Like, can you describe the housing and how it's not up to par?
The housing that she is in is not as deep as she is long. It has very little shade. It has very little refuge for her where she can get away from the public. And for all of these reasons and a couple more that I'm not as familiar with, yeah, under current legal guidelines for housing killer whales, her tank would not be allowed to be built to house a killer whale. It would be illegal. It's too small, basically. It's too small and not built with the whale's welfare in mind. It's built with display in mind. So for her, she needs something different than what she has. For killer whales generally, you brought up sea sanctuaries. You know, it's never been really done on a wide scale with killer whales, and you have to think really carefully about where you put that sanctuary because you don't want to negatively impact the ecology of the area you're putting a fairly large group of top predators in. But I think it's worth exploring, and there are groups exploring that. So the Whale Sanctuary Project is one of the main ones that has a group of people trying to work through what a killer whale sea sanctuary might look like. At the very least, the tanks that do exist should be potentially expanded. I recently was working on a book chapter about killer whales in captivity and trying to inform welfare from a like kind of wild studies perspective. And the thing that shocked me is that there just isn't very much research on killer whale welfare in captivity. We have research about their lifespans and their longevity and their reproductive success and some data on, you know, tooth wear and think, you know, these secondary signs of stress. But there's just not much research that's been done in terms of what kinds of housing make whales less stressed. What kinds of enrichment make the whales' lives better? We really need that research, you know, even with the breeding programs ending, there's still dozens of killer whales in captivity, and we don't seem to have a good handle on how to make their lives better. I mean, the obvious thing is, you know, get them out of the tank, and if you can release them, release them. But a lot of those whales are probably never going to be out of a tank. And while they're in a tank, we need to be doing everything we can to make those lives as good as they can be, given the situation they're in, and the research just isn't there.
Would you say maybe part of the issue, or like not, I guess it's not an issue, but with the movie Blackfish coming out, obviously there was like such a boom of interest in killer whales in captivity. I mean, like I'm like to blame, like I always like loved them as an animal, but like seeing that movie, I was like, oh my God, save the whales. Like, I feel like everyone went through kind of a period of that. And that public interest has like waned a little bit. How could we get like the public to be more interested to maybe make these places kind of consider improving the living conditions of these whales that are still living in those conditions?
I think I'm much more knowledgeable about the, you know, actual information side than I would be about the, you know, public outreach side. But I do agree that, you know, that it's clear to me that the interest has waned, right? There's the diehard whale people who are still talking about it, but the general public interest is not nearly as high as it was after that documentary came out. I do wonder if part of it is, you know, now that we've ended the breeding programs, or at least SeaWorld's ended their breeding programs, there's not as much of a concrete goal that you're kind of asking people to advocate for, right? After Blackfish, it was get the trainers out of the water, get the breeding program ended. I think what the movement would kind of need now to refocus is something to focus on, right? It's not enough to just say marine parks bad. Okay, marine parks bad. What are we going to do about marine parks bad? How do we want them to be not bad? And going back to the lack of research, I think one thing that I would encourage people to push for if they're going to push for something is push for SeaWorld to fund independent research on the welfare of their animals. Put your money where your mouth is. Bring in scientists who are not beholden to SeaWorld, who haven't in writing that SeaWorld has no final say over what their publications say and let them conduct independent research on the welfare of their animals. They don't do that. You know, they'll let outside researchers come in and study things about diet and energy and all this stuff, but they don't really, as far as I know, allow outside researchers to come in and study their animals' welfare. If we could get that happening and we get the results of those, then we can go to the next step, which is, okay, what does the science say we need to do for the whales? And then we can push for them to do that. Until we have that knowledge, we can't do anything. So personally, and it's a bit scientists saying we need to do more science, but that is to me the thing that would most further, you know, helping whales in captivity is having independent research into their welfare.
I'm curious if we can also talk about, I guess, whales that are still in the wild with things like global warming or just climate change, how we know that that's already affecting whales and then whales in their role in like the larger ecosystem. What kind of concerns are there?
Yeah, so whales' role in the larger ecosystem, you know, depends on what species of whale you're talking about. But one of the big things they do from a global warming perspective is sequester carbon. They live long lives. They eat a lot of things while they're living those lives. So their bodies just soak up carbon throughout their life. When they die, they sink to the bottom so that carbon doesn't go back up into the atmosphere immediately. So whales are actually a great carbon sink for us. They're also just kind of keystone species in a lot of ways. Baleen whales, the big whales, the whales that eat, you know, krill swarms and little fish, they're both kind of these predators that help regulate populations, but also they're so massive when they die, that feeds first, you know, sharks and other scavengers at the surface. They become whale fall, which actually serves as kind of the only pocket of nutrients in the deep sea. There's a bunch of animals that exclusively feed on whale carcasses. And speaking about killer whales, I mean, they are tippy-top predators. We don't know exactly what the consequences of losing killer whales are. We know there are parts of the world where they are pretty key in regulating the populations of the animals they eat, like seals and sea lions. In terms of how global warming is affecting whales, generally, as with everything, you get a disrupted ecosystem from the bottom up. That's going to affect the things that are kind of most precarious to start with. So whales being fairly high up on the food chain and needing a lot of food, pretty precarious. I'll speak about my whales in particular. I mostly work on this group called the Southern Resident Killer Whales. They are salmon specialists. So killer whales all around the world eat all kinds of things. My killer whales are extremely picky and they eat salmon. They eat Chinook salmon pretty exclusively. And Chinook salmon breed in rivers. They lay their eggs in rivers. Those eggs hatch and they come out to the ocean. When those rivers get too hot, the eggs die. You cannot get spawning salmon in warm rivers. So that, along with the decreased ocean survival of salmon in hotter water, is one of the main things that's hurting our killer whales. So they're listed as endangered within Canada and the States. There's only, we haven't finished our census for the year, but there's only about 74 of them. I think every species of whale, particularly as you get closer to the poles, is going to be really, really affected, is already being affected by climate change. It's going to be more so as things heat up.
I'm curious why you chose also that particular breed, that species of whale, because it's the same as an orca, no?
Yes.
I believe that is maybe Slater's favorite type of whale, but I could be wrong.
Orca whales, killer whales, yeah. That is like my favorite animal. It's funny, you said earlier that you live in the San Juan Islands. I've always like wanted to take a trip there to see if I could like see a whale in person, like in the wild.
It's one of the easiest places to get to where you are likely to see killer whales in the wild. I would really recommend going up there. It's great. I'm happy to show you around the Center for Whale Research if you do make it up to San Juan Islands.
I would die and cry all day long.
So yeah, to answer, orcas and killer whales, same thing. People often call them orcas because it sounds nicer. I call them killer whales because they're top predators, and I think that's one of the most interesting things about them. I don't know why I chose them. I wish I had a better answer for this question. I could really bullshit and say like, oh, they have this really fascinating social structure that teaches all this stuff about the evolution of kin selection, and that's all true, but I learned that after I was already super interested in killer whales. I have wanted to work with killer whales since I was probably like 4 years old. I got hyper-fixated on them really early. I just think they're the coolest. I just think they're the absolute coolest animals. And this particular population I study, they're some of the first whales, killer whales I ever saw in the wild, but also I kind of have a deal with myself that once there's 95 of them, I can maybe work on something else. But until then, I'm kind of stuck in on these guys because they're the ones who need to be studied more at the moment. I'm completely in agreement. Killer whales are the best animal, definitely.
What's your favorite thing that has ever happened while you've been like out on like a research trip or while you've been like, you know, literally like on a boat, like any like cool moments that you've had that have been like just crazy?
Oh boy. Oh, my favorite moment. Okay. I'll give a cool one and I'll give a silly one. My favorite cool moment, it was back in 2015. I had just started a nonprofit called the Orca Behavior Institute, and we were pretty flat broke. So we had a really tiny aluminum hull boat is what we were going out to study whales on. It would run out of gas basically every day, and we'd have to pour a cannon. It was a terrible boat, but we loved it. And we were out with J-Pod. So there's three different pods in the Southern Residence. There's J, K, and L. And J-Pod is kind of our most common pod. We see them a lot. They're kind of like family. And we had a hydrophone in the water. We were doing acoustic studies. So we were listening to what the whales were saying, and we were trying to correlate that with behavior and group composition. And someone, it was me, forgot to change the battery in the hydrophone the day before. So the hydrophone died. So we stopped getting hydrophone data. We pull it in and we're sitting there like all kind of bummed, the engine off, whales are going by. And we start hearing calls. We start hearing killer whale calls, which, you know, don't sound like humpbacks. They sound kind of like donkeys. J-Pod is like, ding-dong. We start hearing that. Do we still have the hydrophone in? Is it? No, the hydrophone. And we realized that J49, who is this young male, he's like, you know, just, he was just little at the time, had kind of snuck up on us, was about 20 yards away and was falling at the hull of the boat, and it was resonating through the aluminum hull. So we just sat there and listened to him talking to us for a few minutes. That was really great. He's a cool whale. The silly one happened this last field season in May, actually. We were again out with J-Pod and we had two groups. So we had J22 and J38. So that's a mom and her kind of adult son. The sons and daughters stay with their moms their whole life. So it's this mom and her adult son. They're over here. And then there's this other group, the J19s, which is like a grandma, mom, two kids. And so we're kind of focusing on them and we're, you know, taking our photo ID pictures and noting behavior. And then we suddenly are like, where are the J22s? Where'd they go? I don't know. All right, keep taking a picture. And then we just hear, like, oh, I can't do the sound, just a raspberry. We just hear like someone blowing a raspberry at us. And we look back and J38 had spy hopped and had pointed his blowhole at us. It was just blowing raspberries at us behind our back. I generally like watching killer whales just be killer whales and not acknowledge me and not acknowledge that I'm there. But I really love those moments where they just absolutely mess with us. And it's really clear they're doing it on purpose.
Sneaky little bastards sometimes.
Oh, yeah, they are. I mean, I love them. They're beautiful. They're majestic. They're also total assholes. And I love them.
I feel like because they're such apex predators, they don't have like fear of humans, really. Mm. They're more like curious about us. Would you like, do you find that they are curious when you're like doing research or when humans are around? Because I feel like in a lot of movies I've seen, they're always kind of like checking people out. Whereas yeah. like you like walk up and see like a deer in the woods, like it'll like run away from you.
Yeah. I don't think they're afraid of us at all. They're either indifferent, which is most of the time, especially our whales, they're pretty urban. Like they live between Victoria, Vancouver, and Seattle. So like there's a lot of boats coming by and they know us and they know the other research boats. So I wouldn't say they're so much curious as kind of just like, I think sometimes they get kind of bored and they're like, oh, I'm going to mess with this guy today. I think other killer whales in less busy places might be curious about a boat. In my experience, killer whales' attitudes towards the boat is either totally ambivalent, a little bit playful, or like kind of pissed off. And they'll let you know when they're pissed off. They'll, you know, do a tail slap at you or, you know, just avoid you, right? Just as you're trying to get photos, they'll duck to the other side. It's like, I already have your left side. I need your right side. Please let me get on your right side. No. So, yeah, I don't think fear of humans is a major thing for them most of the time. It might have been in the past, obviously, when they were being captured or before that, when they're being shot by fishermen because they were competing for their fish. And which still happens or has happened relatively recently in some places, you know, in the subantarctic. In that case, you know, fear might develop. But I think as a baseline, I don't think they're afraid of us at all.
I just listened to a podcast about the NASA experiment where we were trying to see if we could teach dolphins English, basically. Mm-hmm. That went like very, very wrong for reasons that people can Google if they want to.
The John C. Lilly experiments and that kind of deal.
It was whatever one where it got like sexual between yep. the trainers and the dolphins, mm-hmm. which is like wild. Like Slater's going to get overly excited about it, but you can
Google it. Hold on. Hold on.
They dropped acid together too, actually.
What is the most sort of communication we can maybe have with a killer whale at some point? But if you also, if you know that story and want to tell us later, please go for it.
John C. Lilly was a scientist who was really interested in dolphin communication. And he opened this big, he built a house that was half underwater. And he had research assistants come in and they were doing all these experiments to try to, as you say, bridge the gap between human and dolphin and develop some communication and teach them to say some English sounding words. And we'd do some dolphin stuff. Part of what he wanted to do is build bonds between the research assistants and the dolphins. So this involves masturbating the male dolphins, involves, I believe, taking acid together with the dolphins. So they lived in this house and, you know, half of it was underwater. You'd go, you'd hang out with the dolphin and go to bed. In terms of what I think we could actually do dolphin communication wise, I don't think we're ever going to uncode the language of killer whales. I don't know if they have a language as such, you know, with grammar and syllables. They certainly communicate complex things to each other, but whether they have a language that we will be able to kind of get a Rosetta Stone for, I don't think so. We do communicate with them all the time, though, right? In captivity, they are constantly doing pretty complicated communication with these animals. The animals are communicating what they're feeling. The trainers are communicating what they'd like the animal to do. So communication is certainly possible. We can definitely train each other to communicate. Having a conversation with a killer whale, I'm not so convinced will ever happen, but we can certainly get better at listening to each other.
I almost feel like they're like aliens or something, but like they were aliens, but they got here first, or maybe like we're the aliens. My God, now I'm getting all like data.
Maybe Slater just dropped acid.
It makes me feel like we're aliens, that like we're not supposed to be put on this earth, and that's why we're destroying it, man. Come on, man.
Oh, no, you're going to get me talking about my other favorite topics, which are UFOs and cryptids. Anyways, we'll stay on topic.
We'll have to do part two of this.
Because I feel like they're so ancient.
Well, I mean, there's something to that, right? You know, they diverged from us evolutionarily over 50 million years ago. You know, that they started moving into the ocean 50 million years ago. Totally separate from us, as far as mammals can be, you know, about as separate as they can be. But killer whales have about the same lifespan. They have similar kind of reproductive life histories. They have a post-reproductive life phase, which is not something many other animals have other than us. They have kind of similar social structures in a lot of ways. I think there is something to that alienness, because you look at this animal that looks nothing like a person on the surface, behaves nothing like a person, but you look in their eyes, looks like someone's home. You look at their social structure and their life history. It's like, that's a water person.
Yeah.
That is a 20-foot long water person.
That is crazy. Oh my gosh. One simple question. What is your favorite whale movie? Orca whale movie? Free Willy? Like, what's your fave?
Okay. So I have a group of researchers I watch bad whale movies with every couple weeks while I'm in the field. We have a long list. Obviously, the best whale movie ever made is Free Willy. That's the best good whale movie. But I encourage everybody to watch the movie Keiko starred in before Free Willy, which is called Keiko en Peligroso. It's a Mexican film, and it is about the plot is that Keiko is, I kid you not, a space alien that has been put on Earth to teach the children to save the Earth from environmental disaster.
It sounds kind of like documentary.
It is an incredible piece of filmmaking. Everybody needs to see it. The world would be a better place if that was showing instead of Thor 58 or whatever. Everybody should just watch Keiko en Peligroso on repeat all day.
Oh my God, I'm going to watch that tonight. I'm so excited.
Where there's smoke, there's fire. There must be some truth to this, you know?
Predictive programming, you know, there it is.
You can stream Slater's Troubled Paradise anywhere and everywhere. You can also follow Dr. Michael Weiss on Twitter at CETACEAN Mike. I think that's a word, Setechian, like crustacean, maybe? I don't know what it means. It's probably whale related. V1NO is produced by Ryan Killian Krause and myself. We are edited by Citizens of Sound. I'm Matthias. We'll see you next time.